The pressure starts before the day even settles. You feel it in the way people watch your son when he walks beside you. They study his height, his tone, his steps. They study you, too. They try to decide if you are strong enough, strict enough, patient enough, or broken enough to match whatever story they already built in their heads. I learned that early. The world never waits to see who your boy is. It decides. Then it acts like you failed before you could speak. Most days, I move through the city with my guard high. In Kingston and in Chicago, I learn the same truth. A mother raising a boy alone walks with her hands full and her back tight. You carry fear and hope in the same breath. You fight systems that don't hear you. You swallow judgment you didn't earn. You push against a silence no one wants to break. And every step you take is one question. How do I teach him to stand tall when I am still learning to survive? End of chapter 1. The room where they decided. Before I spoke. I walked into the school meeting with a calm face. I always do. Calm makes people listen. Calm forces me to control the heat in my chest. Calm buys me time. The teacher gave a short nod, then looked past me at the empty chair where a father should have been. Her eyes slid back to me with a tight smile. It wasn't cruel, it was routine. I could tell. She had already decided what story I belonged to. I sat and waited. They talked around me for a while. They used soft words to cover sharp points. They said my son was bright but restless. Imaginative, but distracted. Strong-willed, but slow to obey. They said these things like they were reading from a chart. None of it felt connected to the boy who sat at my table at 7:12 every morning, eating toast with too much butter and tapping his pencil on the edge of his workbook. None of it felt like the boy who asked if he was doing enough, even when he was tired. The pressure in that room was quiet. It settled in the corners. It came from the way they spoke about him, like he was too much, or not enough. It came from the way they softened their tone for each other, but sharpened it when they turned to me. They weren't cruel. They were sure. Sure that the gaps they saw were because of the gap in his home. I knew that tone. I met it in Kingston years ago, when a woman said my boy needed a man to fix his temper. I met it in Chicago when a counselor asked if I understood how boys fall behind without firm male presence. They said these things like facts. I folded my hands and listened. I let them finish every point. Then I spoke. I kept my voice steady. I said I understood their concerns. I said I watch him work every night. I said I know where he struggles and where he shines. I said his restlessness often comes from finishing tasks early and waiting for direction. Their faces shifted. A small pause. They weren't expecting clarity. They weren't expecting a mother who already knew his rhythms. The meeting moved on. The tension stayed. They showed charts and notes. They spoke about structure and risk of drifting. My jaw tightened. I knew the script. Boys are allowed to be energetic when they are supervised by fathers, uncles, or coaches. When they are raised by a woman alone, that same energy becomes a warning sign. I have heard those warnings in every city I lived in. The voices change. The message stays. I looked at the faces across from me and asked them a simple question. What exactly do you see when you look at my son? The room fell still. The teacher pushed her glasses up and said, he was a good kid, but needed more direction. That word again, direction. I asked what that meant in practice. She hesitated. The counselor stepped in. He said boys need structure at home. I asked him what he believed my home lacked. He didn't answer. The silence in that moment told me everything. They weren't assessing my son. They were assessing me. And they weren't listening to what I said because they thought they already knew the shape of our life. They filled in the blanks with stories of failure they had heard before. They saw the empty chair and built a whole world around it. They didn't ask how I worked two jobs and still sat with him each night. They didn't ask how long it took for him to trust his own voice after years of moving between cities. They didn't ask how many times I stood between him and danger while they slept in peace. I left the meeting with my notes. I stepped into the hallway and let the wait settle. The school was loud with end-of-day voices. Kids pushed past each other, doors slammed, a bell echoed down the corridor. I stood still and breathed. Not because I was shaken, because I needed space to hold the truth. Raising a boy alone means you don't get the benefit of uncertainty. You don't get room to struggle. Every mistake becomes proof of weakness. Every challenge becomes your fault. Outside, the sun was low. I watched my son walk toward me, backpack swinging from one shoulder. He smiled when he saw me, a tired smile but real. His eyes searched my face the way they always do. He tries to read the day before I speak. I bent down and asked him how school was. He shrugged. Then he said something small but sharp. He asked if I was proud of him today. That question hit harder than anything in that room. He didn't ask if he did well. He asked if I was proud. That meant he felt the pressure too. Not the school's judgment, mine, or what he thought might be mine. I touched his shoulder and told him the truth. Yes, always. And I meant it, but I also felt the sting of another question rising in me. How much of this weight is he carrying already? We walked home through the noise of the street. A vendor called out to customers. A bus roared past. A boy on a bike weaved through traffic like he owned the afternoon. I kept my pace steady. I held the bags in one hand and kept the other ready in case he needed me. Mothers raising boys alone learn to move like guards. One eye on the future, one eye on the present. No space to pause. That night, I sat at the table and wrote down everything they said at that meeting. I needed to see it clear on paper. I read each line and crossed out every piece that came from bias instead of fact. When I finished, half the page was marked. I leaned back and let the room settle into darkness. The question from the outline rose again. What happens to a mother's judgment when the world treats her as the problem before she speaks? The answer was simple. You learn to speak sharper. You learn to stand taller. You learn to build truth fast before someone else builds something false around you. And you do it while holding a boy who is watching your every move. I closed the notebook. That was the first destabilizing turn. Realizing the world wasn't just looking at him. It was studying me too. Chapter 2. The Stories Women Tell in Low Voices. I spent the next week listening more than speaking. When you raise a boy alone, you learn that other women carry pieces of your story even when their lives look different. I moved through Kingston and Chicago with the same steady pace, watching how mothers kept their shoulders tight and their eyes alert. The pressure lived in both places. The accents changed. The fear did not. One woman in Kingston told me her son never walked to school without her shadow behind him. She didn't say fear. She didn't need to. Her voice dipped to a lower register when she spoke about boys being watched, judged, or pulled into trouble they didn't create. Another mother in Chicago nodded when I shared that story. She said the same thing happens on her block. She said boys grow too fast in the eyes of people who don't know them. She said neighbors mean well. Until they don't. These moments weren't interviews. They were exchanges between women who learned the same rules by force. You don't admit fear out loud. You don't show where the cracks are. You keep your voice firm when you tell your son no. You keep it steady when you tell the world he is still a child. People think mothers raise boys with softness. They don't understand how much grit it takes to keep that softness alive. The contrast between Kingston and Chicago sharpened the picture. In Kingston, boys become targets when they look like they belong to a particular corner or crew. In Chicago, they become targets when they match a profile someone built in a precinct meeting. The details shift, the burden stays. Women move through both cities with silent calculations. How fast their son should walk, who he should greet, when to pull him closer. When to teach him the slow breath that keeps fear from showing on his face. One afternoon, I visited a mother I knew in Chicago. She kept her apartment neat enough to stop her mind from spinning. Everything had a place, Shoes lined up, dishes washed and dried, nails sorted into small piles, she said order helped her breathe. She said chaos outside forced her to tighten every detail inside. Her son sat at the table drawing cars on loose sheets of paper. She said he didn't like to talk much anymore. She didn't push him. She said boys often speak through silence when the world feels too heavy. I watched him move from the sink to the stove with a slow, practiced rhythm. She didn't waste steps. She didn't raise her voice. She held everything together with quiet precision. I saw myself in that rhythm. Many women do. You learn to balance strength and exhaustion without tipping too far into either. You learn to hide the fatigue in your bones because your son studies your face the way teachers study his behavior. He learns what the world expects from watching you. We sat at the table while her son kept drawing. She lowered her voice when she spoke about the warnings elders gave her. They told her to watch for signs of anger in her boy. They told her to be firm. They told her to be unbreakable. They said these things with concern, but concern can be another form of pressure. It shifts the weight from community to mother. It sets her up as the single barrier between her son and danger. When she fails, the blame circles back to her. I told her what happened at my son's school. She nodded before I even finished. She said the same tone lived in her school meetings, the same fixed expressions, the same quiet judgment. She said mothers raising girls face pressure too, but boys come with a different kind of warning label. Teachers expect trouble early. Neighbors expect noise. The police expect defiance. She said fighting that label becomes a second job that no one pays for. Her words sharpened something in me. I had spent years thinking I was guarding my son from the world. I didn't realize the world was already studying him long before he had the language to understand what they saw. Boys are handed identities they didn't build. They grow into them by force or by survival. Mothers try to steer them away from those scripts, but the scripts keep returning. Later that week, I watched my own son at home. He sat on the floor sorting toy cars by color. He wasn't thinking about danger or judgment. He wasn't thinking about school meetings or quiet warnings. He was just being a child. But I watched him closely. Something small had changed. He checked my expression more often. He paused before speaking. He watched me with a careful eye when I moved around the room. It hit me in the chest. He was beginning to sense the weight I hide. Children don't need full explanations to feel pressure. They pick it up like heat from the air. I closed the distance between us and sat beside him. I didn't ask what he was thinking. I didn't push the moment. I just stayed there, close enough for him to lean if he wanted. He held one of the cars in his hand and tapped it against the floor. He didn't look up when he spoke. He said he wanted to make sure I wasn't tired from the meeting. I kept my voice steady when I told him I was fine, but inside I felt the shift. This was the midpoint turn, the moment he started reading the weight on me, instead of the other way around. Raising a boy alone means you have to keep him from carrying burdens too early. It means you monitor the emotional weather in your home as closely as the world outside. You teach him strength without turning him cold. You teach him caution without turning him fearful. You teach him presence without teaching him to shrink himself. And you do all of this while systems keep placing blind spots at your feet. The women I spoke to understood that balance. They walked the same tightrope. They made the same silent calculations. They feared the same outcomes. And they moved through their days with steady hands because their sons watched every shift of their breath. I felt that truth sit heavy in my chest as the week ended. This wasn't just my story. It was a map shared across cities, countries, and quiet conversations. By the time Sunday came, I sat at my kitchen table and wrote a single line in my notebook. The world had already decided what boys become. Mothers work every day to prove otherwise. And now my son was beginning to see how hard I fought that battle. That was the escalation. The point where pressure stopped being something outside my door and became something I had to manage inside my home. The moment my boy's eyes changed told me everything. The clock had started. and I had to move with more care than ever. Chapter 3. The night the system showed its real face. Its past way, its bad way. Don't be wrong. What is the fate? The call came at 8:19 in the evening. I was washing dishes when the phone buzzed against the counter. The tone in the voice on the line hit me before the words did. They said my son had been stopped near the corner store. They said there had been an incident. They said he matched a description. My breath stayed even, but something cold settled inside me. I dried my hands, grabbed my keys, and stepped into the night. The street outside was loud, in the way evenings can be when trouble is close. Cars moved slow. People watched from porches. A police cruiser rolled past with its lights off. I kept walking, my pace steady, my jaw set. I knew what could happen when people look at a boy and decide he fits a story they built long before he arrived. I had lived that truth in Kingston and Chicago. Now, it was at my door. When I reached the corner, I saw him. My son stood beside two officers. His shoulders were tight. His hands hung stiff at his sides. His eyes were fixed on the ground. He wasn't crying. He wasn't shaking. He was bracing. That sight cut into me more than anything. A child shouldn't know how to brace like that. I walked toward them with calm steps. Calm is a weapon when the world is watching. I asked what happened. They said there had been a report of a boy running after a minor dispute inside the shop. They said he matched the height and hoodie color. They didn't say anything about his face. They didn't say they asked questions before calling me. They only said he matched a description. That word, again. Matched. I asked if the store owner accused him. They said no. I asked if he was found with anything. They said no. I asked why he hadn't been allowed to walk home. They paused. One of them shifted on his feet. I have heard that line too many times. Protocol has a way of bending around boys who look like mine. I turned to my son and asked if he was hurt. He shook his head. His voice was small when he said no. I could hear the strain under it. I asked the officer if he was free to go. They said yes. I nodded once, took my son's hand, and walked him away from the lights. I didn't look back. I didn't need to. The weight was already sitting in my chest.
Pod? Wait. Why? Why?
When we reached the edge of our block, I stopped and waited for him to breathe. His shoulders dropped in slow increments. He said he didn't run. He said he was buying a drink. He said a man ran past him and then people started yelling. I listened to every word. I believed every word. And I felt the truth carve itself deeper in me. Raising a boy alone means you don't get to fall apart when he needs you steady. You carry your fear in your pocket and keep your voice level. We walked home in silence. Not the cold silence of anger, the heavy silence of understanding. Something had changed between the world and my son. A line had been crossed, not by him, by the system that looked at him and saw a shadow instead of a child. At home, he went straight to his room. I stood in the doorway and watched the way he sat on the edge of his bed. He kept his hands clasped tight. He wouldn't meet my eyes. He said he didn't want to scare me again. That hit harder than anything the officer said. He thought the burden was his. He thought protecting me was part of his job. He was too young for that kind of weight. I sat beside him and kept my voice steady. I told him he didn't scare me. I told him he did nothing wrong. I told him the world sometimes reacts before it thinks, and sometimes it gets it wrong. He nodded. But I could see the doubt sitting behind his eyes. Doubt changes boys. It changes how they move, how they trust, how they breathe when they step outside. Later that night, after he fell asleep, I sat at the kitchen table with the light low. I wrote down every detail of the incident. The time, the location, the words they used, the tone they carried. I recorded it because I needed clarity. Mothers raising boys alone learn to hold records the way others hold prayers. You keep them close because truth is the only shield you have. As I wrote, I felt the synthesis of everything I had heard and seen across two cities. Kingston and Chicago shared a common burden. Women fight to keep their sons alive in systems that pretend neutrality while acting on fear. The strength required turns into an invisible toll, a toll we rarely admit out loud. The question rose again. What does society owe mothers who live in a state of quiet preparedness, who watch every corner, who challenge every assumption, who rise after every hit and still manage to raise boys who trust softness enough to keep it alive? I closed the notebook. I looked down the hallway toward my son's room. I knew the cost. I knew the pressure. And I knew the truth no one wants to say. Mothers raising boys alone aren't asking for praise. They're asking for breath, for space, for systems that don't turn their children into threats before they learn who they are. My final words that night were simple. I will keep fighting. But the world needs to change too. Because strength is not endless, and the weight doesn't lift on its own.